Presbyterian Fellowship as we are continuing here in the text, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, where Peter now calls husbands front and center in regards to Bible doctrine as to be applied in their lives. We're reading the verse again. You husbands likewise, live with your wife in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman, and render honor as a fellow heirs of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. And in regards to the adverb likewise, figuring out where Peter's coming from there, while one may say there's a sense of submission in regards to this, how would that apply? And obviously, the Bible makes clear that the husband is the authority over the wife, and all things is fitting on the Lord. And the sense there of the adverb, as we have brought out, is the fact that the husbands are to also apply Bible doctrine and God's directed will for their life, as with the wives, hence bind themselves to the directed will of God and submitting to his authority, and therefore, in that sense, you might say, submission retains a thread of context in regards to the sense there. So the doctrinal instruction here given to the husbands, as we brought out, is twofold. That's point 10. Live with your wife in an understanding way as with weaker vessels, since she is a woman, and be in grander honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. So 11, the two imperatival participles, live with and grant, bind these husbands to the directed will of God. As all will imperatives are what God wants you to think, say, and do, or don't do. So 12, God's directed will. These participles spin off the force, the imperatival participles, be submissive in 2:18 and 3:1, binding both servants and wives also to God's will. So it has that idea. Point 13, in that vein, the idea of submission is threaded into the instructions for husbands. So 14, husbands have a higher duty than just to bring home a paycheck and bark out orders. There's more to having a successful marriage in regards to being an authority. Being an authority demands responsibility. And as an authority, you are there to serve, literally, in this respect. So 15, where we pick up the first participle, live with, which is the compound soon, koikeo, has the idea of, quote, cohabit, end quote, in the marital setting. 16, while used only one time in the New Testament, it highlights marriage in general as translated in the Septuagint, and then further has a sexual overtone. Genesis 20, verse 3, gives us an idea of Septuagint in the Greek translation of the Hebrew text. While the Septuagint is not inspired, often is referred to, becomes inspired in the New Testament. And further, it provides you understanding in regards to meaning of words that are used at one time in the New Testament otherwise. Genesis 20, verse 3, but God came to Abimelech in a dream of the night and said, "In behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is married." Cohabitating with somebody else. So marriage there is a sense of Deuteronomy 24:1. When a man takes a wife and marries her, desires to cohabitate. And it happens, he finds no favor in his eyes because he found some indecency, etc. To show you the meaning of the term there. In Isaiah 62:5. For as a young man marries a virgin, so your sons will marry you. As the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so your God will rejoice over you. And then Deuteronomy 22:13. soil overtone in regards to the marriage, in regards to cohabiting, if a man takes a wife and goes into her as consummating the marriage, sexual intercourse, then turns against her. So there you see it has a distinct sexual overtone, 25:5. When brothers live together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go into her, that's our term. So cohabitate with her sexually as well as physically. And take her to himself as a wife, perform the duty of the husband's brother to her. Be glad you're not living in the age of Israel. 17, so that gives you kind of a sense of this term. 17, the force of this verse depicts the union of husband and wife as one in living their lives together. When one is married, that which binds marriage, consummates it, is the sexual act of consummation after the vows are spoken. And when that sexual act occurs, a union is performed, and husband and wife are as one. Obviously, you can look at the male and female anatomy and have the visual of being one and a union occurring in that respect. So, the force of this verb of cohabitating, living with their wives, the husbands, looks at this union that has been brought together, divine institution, a marriage, and that they are to live as one with each other in that union. They are as one person, husband and wife. Hence, while the property of husband and wife, it becomes shared with one another. What is his is hers, and what is hers is his, in that respect. But because of the union itself, the oneness obviously has great impact in regards to how they are to function and what the relationship means. So, 18, the idea of its use in our verse is that while sex is a normal aspect of marriage, physical consummation, the relationship is not only about sex. Like the wife's beauty is not only the overt. It's more than just sexual intercourse or having sex. No, you are one. You are partners in life. You are bound together contractually and in God's eyes. And you are to operate, if you will, in that single mold of familial setting as husband and wife. That's why when people get married, they are to leave their parents, obviously showing that they are no longer under their authority, and cleave to one another. The wife becomes under the authority of her new husband, and they have established a new authoritative regime, a new marital regime in regards to their own household. So, living here, the command to live with, to cohabitate, Peter wants the husband to recognize that it's more than just physical, it's more than just sexual, but it is a bond of what it really means to be fellow heirs, joint or one together in this respect. So 18 again, the idea that's used in our verse is that while sex is a normal aspect of marriage, obviously it should be, the relationship is not only about sex. So 19, the central aspect of the imperative is then seen in the prepositional phrase qualifying the command to live with in an understanding way, kata gnosis, clearly translated according to knowledge, to cohabitate in the blessing of this marital union, and we are to live in this vein according to knowledge. So 20, the knowledge in view, obviously, is specifically the application of doctrinal principles toward the weaker vessel. The application of doctrine. The knowledge, obviously, is not about cosmic or human viewpoint knowledge. Peter wants a husband to understand the relationship is based on doctrine. The knowledge of doctrine, and obviously the spiritual relationship that is to coincide in regards to their physical relationship with their wife. To be discerning, to have an understanding of what the wife is, the blessing she is to be, and how she is to be dealt with. One who, as I brought out here, contextually, falling on the heels of being oriented to the husband's authority as a positive adjusted wife. And obviously, doctrine says you don't take advantage of the situation in regards to abusing your authority simply because, but see what the Bible says here? You know, you're dismissing all things. Well, why are you acting like a jackass for? Where are you getting that authority to act like that towards your wife? So it's got to be with understanding. So the knowledge of being essentially the application of doctrinal principles toward the weaker vessel, as she is so referred to here in the context. 20:21 is described as, quote, with an intelligent recognition of the nature of the marriage relationship by Vincent, the commentary. He describes it with an intelligent recognition of the nature of the marriage relationship. The male and female nature living together as one. So 22, the union of marriage goes beyond the physical union of sex. And the statement implies that it is something a man must, quote, know how to do, end quote. It's not just do your own thing. When one gets married, they take on additional responsibilities in regards to living their life. They are accepting a partner that they are to grow up with spiritually, obviously, looking at the relationship of two believing spouses that are adjusted or positive to doctrine, which is the context here. And one must have discernment in regards to how to handle or deal with or apply to the opposite sex in this respect. The physical union, it comes naturally, quite honestly. But the spiritual aspect of it, in regards to applying doctrine, takes discipline. And it takes the fact that you know how and what God expects from you in regards to your application to your wife. So 23, Peter is admonishing husbands in the royal family that they must step up to the plate spiritually on behalf of their wives with doctrinal understanding. Now, husband, you're the authority. Then you need to step up to the plate and exercise up your authority on behalf of your wife spiritually in application of doctrine in regards to your household. Yeah, bring in the paycheck, he helps try to provide the living grace for the family. But just as the wife's responsibility in regards to taking care of the household, etc., is there, so is that there for you, but that's not where it stops. Also, one is to ensure that doctrine is maintained as the most pressing responsibility on their behalf, and doing what they can in regards to their niche to ensure that that is not interrupted or distracted unnecessarily in regards to maintaining the spiritual advance. So Peter is admonishing husbands in the royal family that they must step up to the plate spiritually on behalf of their wives with doctrinal understanding. 24, the generalizing tone of the husband living with wives and understanding gives way to the specifics then with respect to the kind of knowledge a husband must implement if he hopes to have a happy and stable marriage. In other words, a marriage that God is free to bless. And that comes in regards to the fact of understanding she's a weaker vessel. And she is also part of the fellow heirship in regards to the plan of salvation for her life, along with you. So the generalizing, again, point 24, the generalizing tone of the husband living with wise and understanding gives way then to the specifics with respect to the kind of knowledge a husband must implement if he hopes to have a happy and stable marriage. 25, only when a husband understands what his love obligations fully mean can he attain to the equivalent of what a believing wife is called to be in the preceding section. Whereas she's given the title of being a Sarah's daughter, obviously the equivalent of a husband who is adjusted and doing God's will for his life. He must understand God's directives for him in that respect, just as she has to understand it. 26, a husband that is derelict in the understanding and application of his duty code towards his wife is in jeopardy, as is a wife that is contentious and insubordinate. 27, the distributive comparison of wives as weaker vessels indicates that as females, they are more physically fragile than the male sex. That's why, obviously, often you will hear the female species referred to as the weaker sex. That's just the natural development of the creation of man and woman. The male physically, under normal circumstances, is stronger than the female. Even physically weak males are generally still stronger than physically fit females. 28, now the noun here, skouos, is used as a material object, such as a piece of pottery, and metaphorically, it's used of the human body. It's used here, Romans 9, 21 to 23. Or does not have the potter have a right over the clay to make from the same lump one vessel for honorable use, another for common use, our term vessel. And here the analogy of God in regards to creation of men. What if God, although willing to demonstrate his wrath and make his power known, endured with much patience vessels of wrath prepared for destruction? In our term vessels. And there, metaphorically, in the analogy refers to the bodies of the individuals, the person. And he did so in order that he might make known the wealth of his glory, his divine essence, upon vessels of mercy, which he prepared beforehand for glory. 2 Corinthians 4, 7. Verse 6, for God who said light shall shine out of darkness, that the one who has shown in our hearts give the light, the knowledge, and the glory of God in the face of Christ. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, our bodies, that the surpassing greatness of the power may be of God and not from ourselves. First Thessalonians 4:4. That each of you know how to possess his own vessel with sanctification and honor. Using your body, obviously, to serve God rather than to satisfy his STA predilections. 2 Timothy 2, 20 and 21. Paul makes an analogy again. In a large house, there are not only gold and silver vessels, but also vessels of wood and of earthenware, some to honor and some to dishonor. A really nice pause that takes the center of attention versus, you know, a bedpan, vessel of dishonor. Therefore, the man cleanses himself, rebounds from these things, he will be a vessel for honor. His body, he obviously uses his body for the glory of God. Sanctified, useful to the master, prepared for every good work. So 29, the emphasis of this designation here is not intellectual, moral, or spiritual, but purely physical. Purely physical in this respect. Your attitude and perception of your wife. 30, it is a reminder to the husband that first and foremost, he is not to take advantage of his physical strength over his wife in abuse of authority. Obviously, it's easy for a male to intimidate through his very physical presence in regards to a female. Just out, whatever they want to do, get mad, red in the face, you know, hitting the walls, showing off, you know, in that regards, under anger. You know, and obviously, it's intimidating to the female sex. What can they do to truly defend themselves? Unless you're stupid enough to let them know where you get your gun hit in that case. But we understand that. And first and foremost, in regards to applying doctrine, we are not to use our authority physically, trying to use our physical stamina or strength to intimidate or take advantage in regards to our helpmate who is created physically, obviously more fragile than we are. 31, just as a Sarah's daughter is not to be aggressive verbally, neither is an aggressive husband to intimidate through physical aggressiveness. Generally how it works. Wife starts snagging or whatever, you know, verbally gets aggressive. Husband starts throwing his weight around the house as he gets under his STA and anger in response. That's generally the way it works. And obviously, we aren't overruled our tendency to do so, or any tendency to do so. So 32, the notion that women are, quote, weaker, end quote, than men, was commonplace in the ancient world. 33, an example of thought is illustrated in Plato's Republic, 5 and 455b, there. Yet, as he quotes, yet for all, a woman is weaker than a man, end quote. He's dealing with physical strength. 34, this reality has not been proven invalid for all the modern propaganda. Women do actually do try to elevate themselves in the circles of professional sports and give them a little room in there, etc., to maybe do so, but overall, when it comes to feats of physical strength, they don't hold it. It's just the way it is. You don't hold it. Anything in regards to matching the man's strength. And I don't care about feminist propaganda. And again, we're not saying that women, some women are more physically fit and stronger than other women. We understand that. But in comparison to the male species, it has yet to be proven any different. So, 35, this fact of the women being the more fragile of the species has influenced many men to appreciate the women in society. Because of that, some societies, I mean, you can see it in regards to their cultures and how they treat women. And men will treat them almost on a subhuman level with in regards to showing them respect and courtesy and things of this nature. Obviously, the Islamic society still reflects this greatly. 36, this is evident by the way women are treated in many cultures, and they're not the only ones. Laws that are, you know, hypocritical in regards to males and females, things of this nature. 37, the phrase, since she is a woman, here is the adjective gunaios, not only used here in the New Testament. 38, it's used in the Septuagint, indicates that which strictly belongs to a woman. That which strictly belongs to a woman. Deuteronomy 22:5b. A woman shall not wear man's clothing, nor shall a man put on a woman's clothing, that which strictly belongs to a woman. Whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. See transvestites and bush dressers. They're an abomination to God. People think this is a fine, they're not hurting anybody. Just open the doors for a little bit more cursing to come on the nation, like we need some more. You know, that's how it goes. So, there is use, obviously, read now the Hebrew text, but you get the idea that which belongs to a woman, their clothing or dress, attire. 39, now the dative case that follows there. The dative case in regards to the phrase, since she is a woman, can be translated one of two ways. For that befitting a woman, or to the female sex. Live with your wife and understand anyway as a weaker vessel, for that befitting a woman, or as a weaker vessel to the female sex. In other words, looking towards, indirectly, application towards her as a female. So 40, the adjective functions here as a bridge between the first imperative, live with, and the second imperative, participle, to grant. 41, it carries the idea that the husband living with his woman, doctrinally, does so as that which is properly befitting the weaker sex, on the first part of it, and then further propels the force of granting her honor as applied to the wife that follows, that is, to the female granting her honor. So you can go both directions, and it's kind of a bridge in Peter's thoughts here. So 42, the participle grant, which is apoduo, means to assign, distribute, or portion out. 43, the noun honor, kinae, means having a regard for her person of something that is considered valuable and due respect. They are due respect. Something that is valuable, something they consider you need to respect it in that vein. 44, the question is then, how does a husband doctrinally distribute honor upon his wife? How do you honor your wife? as being part of being a weaker vessel in this respect. And granted, 45, this is found in the fact that it's a weaker sex. The woman is designed to be a helpmate or responder. In other words, she is designed to be subordinate to authority, and hence a responder in regards to the husband. For again, Genesis 2:18. Then the Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him. And then as we saw verse 16, verse C, in regards to yet your desire for your husband, yet your desire shall be for your husband, and he will rule over you. So you got to understand the makeup of the female sex as God has created it. And that is, first and foremost, she's designed to be a helpmate or designed to be a responder, to submit and to emotionally be dependent in this respect. So 47, one of the most fundamental needs of a woman is affection. It is important that the man show his wife affection. She's dependent. And hence, that which is dependent, like a life itself, a newborn baby, how do you nurture that baby? Show it affection. You show it love. You take care of it. And obviously, the wife is going to apply Bible doctrine, and she's going to become dependent. And her affirmation is subordination to your authority. So you've got to respond appropriately. You've got to make sure that her needs otherwise as a responder, which deals with the affections and emotions of the woman, are dealt with appropriately. 49 is something she cannot live without and feel secure, important, and needed. To be cold in regard to your wife and not show her any affection needs a void in regards to the relationship. And that's just part, again, of the makeup of the woman. That needs to be fed. Not in a simple way. Not saying stroke or approbation or anything of that nature. But just recognizing that you kind of have control in regards to how you can make your wife feel in this respect. And that is either with a legitimate response or no response or a non-legitimate response. 50, affection symbolizes security, protection, and approval. You will take care of your wife spiritually, physically, to ensure that not only male predators are dealt with in any case of attempts in regards to your wife physically, or spiritual predators, physically, spiritual predators spiritually, to protect her, to do your best to make sure the provision of the house is taken care of physically and spiritually. And also, affection is an indication of approval. For a man to show affection to a woman, the man is stating, I approve. I love you. I approve. Those simple words. 51, from a woman's point of view, affection is the essential cement of her relationship with her husband. It's the concrete emotional bond, if you will, in regards to the relationship between man and woman. Did you do acts of affection, such as hugs, holding hands, phone calls, flowers, invitations to dinner, etc.? Send the message that, quote, I'll care for you and protect you. You are important to me. I'm concerned about you personally. I appreciate you My dad, you do a great job. I sanctify pride in my rival. These are all things that we are responsible to reflect in regards to our women. It's not just correcting her all the time, jumping her crap, you know, because she doesn't obey and jump at your every command the way you think she ought to. But what are you doing to encourage her and to edify her in regards to relationship? And obviously, these are just examples. It can be done in many ways. And you let your wife know that you appreciate her quality volition. How about that one? Man, I like your quality. I'm glad you love Bible doctrine, and you're along with me for this ride, and you're as committed to NPR as I am. No, if that's the case, it's possible in your household to reflect upon the fact that she really is a blessing in regards to what God gave you, and she is your right officer number. So, you know, you can think of your own ways of showing your affection. It doesn't have to be just these ways. But to extend, she's there. I mean, if you're constantly beating down on her mentally or verbally and things of this nature, and you never let her know, you know, how you feel, and emotionally she gets attached to another male somewhere down the line, you know, there's always two sides to this story. You never know. And to disregard their wives, their jobs, their God and life, never home. These things, you see the stories out there. You see it in the cosmos. You see it in churches sometimes. 53 is essential to this command that the man let his wife know regularly in various ways that she, that what she contributes to the relationship is highly valued to him. Okay, I'll change and start applying doctrine. You go, what? Did you just say that? Hey, like I said, I'm always teaching myself. And I'm telling you, as guys, we can always do better. As husbands, you can just do better in this area. And it really strikes me in that respect. You know, some of you, obviously, are probably at the top of the list and do great. But myself, personally, I go, I can do better in this area. Whereas Peter's primary concern for wives is towards those married to unbelievers, his concern here for husbands are those married to believers. Now, something that changes in the context. Before, we were looking at the act of submission, and as it relates to unbelievers or those negative or hostile or antagonistic to doctrine. But the context that Peter has kind of rolled it over, if you will. And the emphasis here is right on the back end of the seven verses that he just got through in regards to relating to wives submitting to their husband's authority, and then what it means to truly be a proper witness and a Sarah's daughter in this respect. And now the instructions to husbands fold into that. So 55, this is made clear in the next phrase introduced by an incentive conjunction in the Greek, even as a fellow heir of the grace of life. Even as a fellow heir of the grace of life. She's got a life too. She's got salvation. She can get SG3 and get the prize just like any one of us. Just like the husband can. See. So what are you doing to help protect her and be edifying in regards to your relationship in that respect? 56, while Peter does not deal with an unbelieving wife here, it is clear from his previous teaching that a husband in that situation will effectively witness otherwise based on a doctrinal understanding in dealing with wives. And he figured, well, hopefully you caught up on that principle. You got to apply doctrine if you have a negative spouse, you know, or dealing with someone's negative. You've got to apply doctrine. And obviously, a husband has proper instructions in regards to dealing with wives while she's not under her authority. The proper instruction will provide a proper witness in that situation. So 57, hence his primary concern is now extended that the husband does not otherwise take advantage at the death of living life, calling, willing to, quote, call him Lord, end quote, to truly submit her trust and confidence in your person in affirmation to authority. That's quite an honor to have someone that can trust you that way and have that type of mental attitude in regards to your person. And obviously that comes from the love within their soul, the doctrine within their souls, that kind of love. 58, whereas Peter's intent was to maximize grace with respect to positive volition versus negative volition in the preceding verses, his desire now is to see maximum grace realized through positive volition with positive volition. Again, Peter, it's kind of hard, but once you pick out certain things in his writings, the implicit thinking that he has, things really open up in understanding and interpretation of Peter. And part of the understanding implicitly in regards to the submitting to authorities, the establishment, chain of command, etc., is the grace, the principle of grace that's behind that and provides maximum grace in regards to potential positive wishes that might be there. And in that respect, obviously, he kind of blends it out now in regards to grace on a sense that, you know, is not ideal. Now, the potential of grace as it would be in an ideal situation and the maximizing in that respect. So 59, he has to be fellow heir here. Sue, Clay, Ronimos is a plural. So 60, it recognizes that the Christian husband and wife are, quote, fellow heirs of the grace of life. We're all designed to inherit all that the plan of salvation has for us for all eternity. So 61, phase 2 blessing is in view in the phrase, the grace of life. All the blessing that God has to offer in that respect. 62, together they share in God's blessings as they are a believing, positive unit. Again, drawing off the term cohabit, to live with. So, the news in regard to married couples, together, have influence in regards to God's blessing, or otherwise, in regards to their marriage, together. And again, it doesn't mean that God's not free to bless otherwise, a positive spouse versus a negative spouse, but it still has influence and it has direct effect on how things go in the household. Whether you're like-minded with one another spiritually and all these other things, same goals, willing to deal with your own SCAs towards one another, all these other things. But you're together and you're living together as one now. 63, they are not two, but one. Therefore, they should live in harmony, love, and mutual respect, acclimating to their separate roles within the institution of marriage. The breadwinner and the homemaker type of roles. That's the dominant roles. Again, you may have assistance on both ends as, you know, tests and things like that come about. But it's not the man's role to sit around the house and let the wife work all the time and bring in the income and not try to provide his own living grace, you know, to have his own work. Now, I've seen guys do that. And they wonder after 10 years why their wife finally leaves them. So they sit on their lazy butts while the wife went out and worked her butt off all the time. See. Glad we don't have that around here. 64, Christian marriages, where the union is not spiritually divided, obviously. Both are positive, if you will. Have a distinct advantage over other marriages where God and His Word are honored. It's like a double possibility for blessing. See? 65, marital discord and dysfunction undermine the blessings of the grace of life. Not get along, constantly at odds, butting heads, disrespectful to one another in their own ways. That's marital discord. Dysfunction. You know, dysfunctioning families. Like Osmonds or whatever.
all the Osborne. Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of. Osborne, too. Most of those people are just concerned about their families.
They're great.
They wonder why their kid ends up, you know, looking and acting the way he is.
Pervert of the year or whatever.
Victory. Give me a break.
Well, the dysfunctional aspect in regards to families, all that is because there is no true doctrinal unity and harmony within their household. Even those who may aspire and at least attain some religious thoughts, you know, even in the fundamental world, people recognize that. Nazarene marries a Nazarene, a Baptist marries a Baptist, you know, so that they can have unity of thought in their human viewpoint, lukewarmness. At least they're, you know, like-minded in that sense. But you got to have these things. So 66, hence, so 65 again, marital discord and dysfunction undermine the blessings of the grace of life. 66, hence, the significance of Peter's final observation, so that your prayers may not be hindered. Praying for blessing all the prayers that you shoot up. 67, when the husband fulfills his part of verse 7, and the wife responds with love and obedience, his prayers will be that much more efficacious to an all-seeing God. 68, your prayers refers to the prayers of the husbands to whom this verse is addressed, rather than the prayers of husbands and wives in their common prayers. 69, obviously God will answer the prayers of the adjusted husband in the absence of the adjusted wife and vice versa. God's not going to cut you off because your spouse is negative or out of line otherwise. But obviously there is a direct implication and ramification in regards to a husband who allows discord and promotes discord through anger or other means in regards to the household, in regards to his prayer life. 70, when the essentials of verses 1 through 7 are missing, their common prayers, obviously, again, will be hindered. The prayers together, their desires of being husband and wife and, together, and things that they would like to have, blessings and things of this nature. While you strive together, you know, like I say, we're all in this boat together, and so it is in regards to our marriage. You know, with our wives, if they're opposite, or spouses, if they're positive. 71, the infinitive may not be hindered, which is a present passive infinitive, at copto, represents the negative result clause. In other words, the husband's lack of sensitivity to the needs of his wife results in his prayers not being past the ceilings. The insensitive to your wife. Treat her like trash. Like a dog, you'd be able to give commands to, you can sit and roll over and all these other things. That type of attitude. Now, God is just getting your prayers up and down, right and left. Not having true appreciation in regards to her positive volition, her person, dealing with it, and with respectfully, things of this nature. All the things we've been over. 74, or 73, let's try it, 72. The translation would be resulting that your prayers may not prayers not be hindered. You have the application first, then the promise of blessing in regards to your prayers. 73, if a husband neglects his wife emotionally, uses her only to gratify his sexual physical needs, and his otherwise valid prayers will be put on hold. 74, the same holds true if the husband abuses authority, taking advantage of physical disparity and intimidation or hostile tactics. 75, doctrinally adjusted husbands treat their wives in a way that is proper for a lady and provide support, encouragement, and emotionally for their edification. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light us these things in Jesus' name.